Well, hey, I'm singer-songwriter Andy Lightning Nicola, here with my co-host,
the facilitator of fascination, Jonas Kane.
And you're listening to A Day's Work Podcast,
the podcast enlightening its listeners and how those around us fill their days,
their passions, their fields of choice,
and the paths that got them there.
Today's guest is none other than the facilitator himself, Jonas Kane. I wanted to have Jonas on as the show's first guest because, to me, he's somebody that represents the exact idea of someone whose story ought to be shared with the world. An inspirational speaker by profession, Jonas describes what it's like to go from riding in the backseat of life to taking the wheel yourself. About halfway through this episode, Jonas begins on a story that, with all honesty, has some length to it. But I urge all listeners to hang in, as it might just be the most moving story I've ever been told in person. Without further ado, A Day's Work Podcast. But first, music. An extraordinarily interesting, reflective, inspirational guest, somebody that I consider one of my best friends, a person that I met when I was much younger than I am today, but a friend that I've kept for more than 10 years. His name is Jonas Kane, and he's somebody that everybody ought to experience at one point or another in their lives. Jonas?
I agree. No, it's true. Everyone, my whole... Everyone has a story to tell. Everyone has an influence of some kind. It's a matter of what kind of influence that is. And my mission is to be a positive presence. I often tell people, I am a mirror. Whatever I see, I'm going to mirror it. That doesn't mean if you give me a slap on the face, I'm going to slap you. But I'm gonna mirror back. And give people opportunity to reflect, learn more about themselves. Yeah, I'm just living life.
That's very interesting, the idea of being a mirror. Talk more about that, because when I perceive that, I think a lot about being responsive. You see what is missing from the situation, and you fill that hole. You respond to what the situation needs, given that you know what the result of the situation is that you want. Now talk more to that effect of what you really think that means in a social situation.
Yeah, that's sort of the other side of it too. Then, in the sense of being a mirror to get this other perspective from, because I'm coming to what I'm doing today is an evolution of what I've been working on my entire life. You know, we just don't realize in the beginning what it's going to lead into. And I'm coming into this, I spent years as a magician. And when we practice our magic tricks, it's always in front of a mirror so that we can see where things aren't going well. We can see our moves that aren't good, that we need more practice on. So mirrors, for a performer, specifically a magician, it's meant to show us where we most need to work on. So that's what I'm doing now. In the idea of not to perfect a certain sleight of hand move or certain choreography, but our own personal growth. The idea is that we all have our things that we're working on. How can we be better today than we were yesterday? And how can we be better tomorrow than we were even today?
That's a really great take, the growth mindset. How can you improve upon yourself? But when you say that, but you preface it with the idea of the mirror, you don't mirror back somebody's negative qualities so they can see them, do you?
No, absolutely not. So mirroring, in the sense where that I use it as, it comes from... I was watching this video, I think it was called Catholicism. It was this documentary by this
the Pope.
Not the Pope. Father Barron, I think his name is. He's now a bishop.
Most fathers are Barron.
Oh, you. No, but he has a fascinating thought process on things. And he told the story about how Mother Teresa once, she went with this child. This child was starving, so she went to the, you know, like a bakery or something, and asked for something for the child. Mm-hmm. And according to the story, this whoever was working there, the baker or whatever, spit in Mother Teresa's face. Just spit in her face. And you know what she did?
Tell me.
She said, "Thank you for the gift. Now something for the child."
Interesting.
Yeah.
Now, what do you think her motivation was there?
I think her motivation, that I'm getting chills just telling this story, and who knows if the story is even true. Mm-hmm. I wasn't there. But get I think it's probably based off truth. This idea of when someone strikes you on the cheek, turn the other cheek too. Mm-hmm. The idea is to stand up to negative behaviors, negative actions, instead of returning a slap with a slap or a punch with a punch or a terrible negative word with a terrible negative word, but instead maintain your posture, maintain your poise. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And in that will mirror back. You know, I can only imagine, like, a grown man would never spit in the face of a child.
Of course.
But he just spit in the face of this other grown up, and then they maintain poise and be like, "Okay, now something for the child." It's mm-hmm. like, wait a minute, how am I, you know, acting? You know, it's an opportunity for self reflection. We learn about the human experience by being social, by interacting with others. I had this thought many years ago where I started getting these ideas where I wanted to be a better me, and I thought that I was going to have to go off on my own, you know, be like a hermit or cloistered away. That's what I thought I was going to need to do, because I couldn't.
That's not how you learn. You can't learn alone.
Absolutely.
Well, at least if you try to learn alone, you're stuck in the arena of your own mind, upon which you create you create the rules. You're the judge, the jury, and the sentencer. So if you try to learn within your own mind, you might make some progress, but I can almost guarantee that until you balance and bounce your ideas that you're trying to reflect upon reality, they can't be proven true or false. You can't really understand your own failures or shortcomings until you compare to somebody that doesn't have those. So you might think something is a giant deal if you're alone, or you might be able to kind of, you know, skate over a large issue that you have if you're alone until you compare yourself to somebody else.
Absolutely. You know, we are social beings. Mm-hmm. You know, we are social creatures. It's what, you know, biologically in the research that I've been doing is that we are meant to be in family units. We're meant to live in societies. We're meant to live in communities. Mm-hmm. And that can only happen if we, one, live in a community, and we're active in that community. And in today's world, there's a much looser definition of what a community is. People can be a part of like a subculture that maybe you never even meet in person, but you converse online, mm-hmm. or you have
any thread that has the same interest as you.
Yeah, it's fascinating that the world that we live in is so many different communities within communities.
And with all that said, with all that in mind, how do you, in your professional life, live and try to affect things positively? What do you do?
What do I personally do?
Yeah.
So I do many things, but it's all going towards the same thing. It's all supporting the same mission. So personally, what I'm doing is I'm working on being this positive presence, being a positive influence in the lives of others. And that can happen no matter what career choice you're in. For a while, I thought I wanted to become a janitor.
Why is that?
And the reason I wanted to be a janitor was specifically maybe at like a hospital, or maybe mm-hmm. at a school, mm-hmm. or maybe at a prison, somewhere where
I think you kind of nailed where the three big places where there are janitors.
Yeah, there's janitors in office buildings all over the place. But I wanted a place where
I think in office buildings they're called cleaners.
Well, yeah, I think they're probably called cleaners.
In
yeah.
general, actually. Yeah. I mean, but again.
The general cleaners. Yeah.
Generally.
Generally speaking.
General cleaner, you're reporting for duty.
But the idea is that for a couple things. One, I like the fact that I could be someone who, in a job that traditionally people might see not as hold in the highest esteem, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. but to be able to have this positive poise, to have this countenance about me that, you know, would make people wonder, well, I wonder how is it that he can be so happy
and confident,
know, and confident and like in every interaction, be able to help people in ways. But I also like the symbolism of the world is messy. I'm just doing my part to clean up this corner of the world.
That's very interesting. It's very interesting. I love the idea that you just touched upon where, and I think we all do it subconsciously. We look upon somebody that's in a job that we would really choose not to do. For example, a custodian. You know,
someone needs to do it.
Somebody has to do it. You look at that job and you think, how could they be happy? That's a terrible job. They do that every day. How could they be? And I think we subconsciously judge just to validate our own standing and our own position on something that we chose to do, if we're so fortunate to be doing something that we chose to do. And I think to be able to look at somebody that's doing a job that we would never want to do, that is confident and happy.
And doing it with excellence.
And doing it with excellence. Care. The amount of just sheer volumes that person's presence speaks to every situation they find themselves in, it's more than anybody that's unhappy in something that they chose to do could possibly bring. And it goes back to all the way to your idea of what can I do to bring positivity to situations? Mm-hmm. How can I be a net positive? So Jonas, when somebody's working with you, what are they working with? Who are they working with? What do they have on their hands?
So there's three ways that people can work with me. I can offer them work as a life coach. I can be a team building workshop facilitator or a keynote speaker.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, so those are the three main ways that people can work with me directly in person. I also have online courses that I have. I also have free coaching videos that I release weekly. I also have articles on LinkedIn with free content that, mm-hmm. that people can see.
And the content is focused on what?
It's focused on positivity. It's focused on everyone has a reason to suffer. Everyone has a reason to complain. Everyone has a reason to be frustrated. But what my work is to show people another way of being able to choose fundamentally, instead of choosing frustration, to choose fascination. And there's a primary difference here, because when we're frustrated, it's when we want a better future. We want our situation to be better, but we're not interested. It is a big hurdle. But if we choose fascination, mm-hmm. it has this natural curiosity about it, where you want things to be different. Mm-hmm. Things didn't work out your way the way you like, so you want things to be different. But instead of using it as an excuse to give up, we use it as an excuse to build ourselves up and ask the question, well, how can we make this better? Instead of saying, can I make this better? Because that has inherent doubt in it. Can mm-hmm. I do it? No, it's how can I do it?
That idea is phenomenal. Something you told me maybe 7 or 8, 9 years ago is you set goals. I will have this. I will have this much money in my bank. I will have run 10 miles per, you know, week or whatever. Adding a will rather than a want drastically has changed your results, you've told me. Something that I have then tried to put into practice myself, and things that I know financially, when I've applied that logic to my own financial goals, it absolutely has made a difference. One day I sat down and I realized, okay, I'm making this much money and I have no money in my savings account. That is something that doesn't make any sense. If I say that by this date, I will have, capital W, will have this much money. If I don't meet my own goal, I'll be embarrassed with myself. As opposed to, if I don't set a deadline for myself, there's no way to be wrong.
Yeah, I heard it put well too, that the difference between a goal and a wish is that a goal has a deadline.
Yeah, exactly. I wish that people listen to this podcast. They will listen by the first week. Exactly, that sort of thing. Or else. So, Jonas, you are clearly one of the most reflective people that I know. Reflective in the way that you try to grow your own personality in your own way of life. Tell me, what in your history has led you to this?
Everything. Mm. Everything has. Connecting the dots looking backwards, I can see the little things that pushed me in certain directions that I wouldn't have been able to do otherwise. I was a very shy child. I wouldn't even talk to my own family.
I've never talked to your family. I feel the same way.
Yeah. Come to think of it, I don't think you have. I'm not a natural communicator. I'm not a naturally outgoing person. When I did speak, I always spoke very soft. This is about as loud as I would get. I would speak very, very soft. But I also had a severe stutter. So imagine a very soft speaking stutterer that couldn't get any words out.
Nobody wants to listen to that.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that is tough.
So how would that lend to me now being largely, I'm a public speaker. Mm-hmm. I lead workshops. I speak in front of upwards of 3,000 people, or working one-on-one with people. So from 1 to 3,000, that's how can someone go from not talking to anyone, not being able to talk, to now being able to talk and having something of value to share with people?
What in your past broke that path?
Again, connecting all the little dots looking backwards, I can see that learning a skill, it could be any skill. For me, it was specifically magic. I became fascinated, keyword fascination, I became fascinated with magic.
And just to be clear for all the listeners at home, when he says he learned magic, it means he realized that he was a sorcerer. Not that he began to do card tricks and something lame like that.
I do card sorcery.
Card sorcery, just to be clear. Yes.
Yes. Yes. I am a wizard with playing cards and such.
Yeah, but yes.
So I started gaining these skills. I was fascinated with magic, and when we're fascinated, we're naturally going to extend ourselves beyond our current comfort zone, and we're going to stretch ourselves a little bit. So I was learning these tricks, but the thing is, in order to perform magic,
yeah,
it's just like all other parts of life. You have to have other people. Mm-hmm. I can't just be there.
Your show is nothing without an audience.
Yeah, I can't just be me in front of a mirror, right? That's good for practice, but in order to actually do what it is I'm practicing, I'm going to have to get in front of people.
Yeah.
So realizing that I had something wonderful to share with people gave me the confidence to start talking with people. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was gaining a skill, having something of value, trading value for value, and nowadays value for value, that's me sharing positive principles and practices in exchange for money. Mm-hmm. But when I was a kid, that was trading. Here's a magic trick. Okay, now here, give me applause. Mm-hmm.
I absolutely,
or laughter, or smiles, or acceptance.
So once you found success as a small time magician, I use the word small time magician out of a lack of another word that I could use. What did you use that to follow with? What did you go from there?
Yeah. So after I did magic full time for a number of years. That was my first part time job in high school. I worked through my first round of college. With it, I ended up leaving college, and I ended up doing it full time for a number of years. And that's what I was doing. My dream was to become famous. That was my dream. I wanted to be known for magic, and that's all I could see, because that's all I was focused on. So that's as far as I could see was magic. This is it. Mm-hmm. But then life has other ideas for us, Andy.
Yeah.
You know, life. What was it? The John Lennon saying. Life is what happens
when you're busy making other plans.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite quotes. One of my absolute favorite quotes.
And it's so true.
Yeah.
Because, but it is important to make those plans, though, because think if I saw magic, was like, oh, that's neat, but wasn't fascinated by it, didn't make any plans to get the first magic kit or magic book, or then to say, oh, let me learn these, oh, let me put on a first show. If I didn't plan any of those things,
yeah,
I wouldn't be where I am today.
Yeah.
So even though what I planned on doing is completely different, well, that's okay. I wouldn't be where I am today if not for those other plans. And then life was like, okay, this is what you were really preparing for.
Absolutely.
So as I was making all my plans,
Things happened to me.
And one of the things that happened to me was I ended up getting engaged to this wonderful, wonderful woman. Someone came into my life, and that was the best magic trick.
Now, Jonas, I happen to know some details of this story. This is one of the most inspirational and sad roller coaster stories that I've ever heard from any of my friends. If you want to share the story, I ask that you share the entire leading up to story.
Okay, I can gladly. My goodness, I love talking about it because this, if I look back, honestly, this story is the one that changed my life the most. Like this one person helped shape me the most. Yeah, my parents brought me into this world, and various teachers and family and friends along the way, but this one person has influenced me the most in the most profound ways. So this woman in question, her name is Stephanie, and we met in high school. And I knew instantly that...
You're from?
I'm from Palmer, Massachusetts. Okay. And I think she moved into town when I was like a freshman or sophomore or something. And when we met, we became very close friends. Of course, I fell in love with her instantly because she's Stephanie. Who wouldn't fall in love with her? She was gorgeous and fun and loving and outgoing. And oh my goodness, the most... the most inspiring and fascinating, another word, keyword, fascinating. Most fascinating person. But she always like, oh no, we're just friends. And to me, that was just fine. I was like, that's okay. As long as you're around. Mm-hmm. In fact, I remember the day that I had invited her to go with me to the winter semi-formal one year. And this was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'd never invited anyone to anything here. I'm just Jonas.
This guy with the soft voice and the stutter.
Yeah, doing card tricks.
Card sorcery.
And that was my life, was just doing card sorcery. Practicing in front of a mirror, trying to book shows. And then this woman comes along and I'm like, oh, I know a good thing when I see it. This is a good thing. And so I invited her to go to and she said yes. She said yes. So we went to the winter semi-formal, December 3rd, 1999.
My goodness, you're old.
It was a beautiful evening. And this one, at one particular time, we were in the cafeteria, and it was decorated, winter school formal. And we went and we sat down along these chairs in the back of the room. And just as we sat down, this is a true story, just happened the other day. Inside joke, I'll tell you in a moment. this first slow song of the night came on. And me.
You think, it's my time.
This is it.
This is the moment.
I'm going to get to dance.
I'm about to become a man.
Yes, because that is the defining moment.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to hold her hand so hard.
Oh my goodness, it's going to be great. But you know what happened? I chickened out. Because I was like, I'm just Joni. Who am I to ask Stephanie to dance with me to the slow song?
The slow song.
Who am I? Of course, I was her date. That's who I am.
That's who you was. So I think by default, Even if she didn't like you that much, or if you smelled that night, one dance. She could have given you one dance.
Yeah. So I was just sitting there trying to ask her. She was sitting there waiting for me to ask. And while all this is happening, this other guy comes up. And he asks her to dance. I was like, who does this guy think he is? I still remember his name, Chris Ross.
This guy, Mr. Two First Names over here.
And he says yes.
She says yes.
She says yes. She says yes. So they go off dancing. And I'm just thinking to myself, I mean, you know, looking backwards now, what a huge, you know, talk about, you know, a physical representation, you know, metaphor of this. Here I am sitting on the sidelines because I couldn't ask one simple question. Can I have this dance? What? It's a missed opportunity. Opportunities don't often come around twice. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, it did for me. I mean, literally later on that night, I did dance with her. Yeah. But, you know,
meanwhile, to be fair, Love Shack came on and all logic was out the roof at that point.
Oh, yeah.
Love Shack, baby.
Please? I think it is please.
Love Shack, baby, please. Funny story really quick about this. I was at a tour of the Arlington Cemetery. Thus far, the story's hilarious, right? Arlington Cemetery in Washington, D.C. And the tour guide made a big stink on the bus. Make sure your phones are turned off.
It's fair.
It would be ridiculous to have you have your phone go off in a cemetery. I agreed. We're in the middle of the tour, and all of a sudden, like 10 seconds into the cemetery, and over a vastly turned up all the way cell phone, we hear, Love Shack, give me love. Her phone was on.
The tour guide?
The tour guide's phone, and her ringer was Love Shack. Meanwhile, there was an absolute funeral happening 100 feet away, and they weren't feeling the Love Shack.
Well, maybe that was the dearly departed's favorite song.
You know what? Maybe we hit the funeral lottery.
Maybe we did. Maybe you did.
Anyway, you were at the dance. You danced with her.
I did. Well, here's the thing. So watching everyone else dancing, me sitting on the sidelines because I couldn't speak up. When the song ended, she came up to me. And these are the words that she said. And this is where the real lesson came from for me, that I carry this with me with everything else that I do in life. She said, if you want to dance with me, all you have to do is ask.
If you want to dance with me, she says to you, all you have to do is ask.
Yeah.
Clearly, that was the case because the other kid did ask and he got to dance with her.
Yeah. So I was like, okay. So we ended up, you know, she was a year older. You know, she was a couple years older than me, but she was a year older in you know, grade-wise. Mm-hmm. So when she went off to college, we lost touch for a number of years. This was in before cell phones, you know, we had email then.
Had it been 2001.
Yeah. So it was like, it was harder. It was before Facebook, MySpace, even before MySpace.
Yeah. MySpace is, that's when they invented the wheel, correct?
That is.
Yes. It was like, my understanding of the world was Big Bang, Plato, Jesus, wheel, MySpace.
That's what it was. Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, after high school, you know, I did try to find her, but you know, how do you find friends? You know, before this, so there was, of course, internet, Google search. I was like, okay, I need to look for my adult friend finder.
And that's how Ashley Madison began.
I think so.
You were the first client of AshleyMadison.com.
So I was like, I'm not getting the results I'm looking for.
This serves a different need. I will save this for later. This is not
when
bringing
I'm not
me to
at
Stephanie.
The library.
Yes. My goodness.
So I was like, okay, well, you know, okay, sarah, sarah, you know, whatever will be, I guess.
Meanwhile,
gone.
Chris Ross on a different computer is having just wicked good results. He's just pictures of Stephanie nonstop.
Oh.
This kid, by the way, Chris Ross is the one that invented MySpace.
I think he is.
Chris Tom Ross.
Tom was his middle name.
Yeah, I knew it.
So meanwhile, I was like, okay, I'm just going to keep living my life. doing my thing, mm-hmm. and that's where the story now picks up, where
chapter two of Jonas and Stephanie.
She comes back into my life, and the reason she came back into my life, I had stopped looking for. But you know what I was doing? This is another very important point. I had stopped looking for, and instead I was looking for my best self. Mm-hmm. So I was taking every opportunity that I had to better my act, constantly practicing, learning new tricks, but also going to networking events to...
How old are you at this point?
So this was 22, 23, okay. Yeah, around there. So I found, and so I go into all these events. I ran into someone, happened to be her father.
By chance, you didn't know that? Did you know that it was her father?
I didn't recognize him at first, but you know, he was like, "Yeah, you know my daughter." I was like,
"Yeah, I do."
Your daughter, and he said Stephanie, and I was like, "Oh, I found her." By looking for myself, I found her. So
back to the mirror.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's a theme. So I gave him my business card. And I said, you know, tell her to give me a call. You know, if she wants. Try to play it cool.
But also, underline, please.
Please, yes. And a couple of days later, I got a phone call.
That's phenomenal. Man, that's phenomenal.
She came back into my life. And it was the coolest to hear her voice for the first time in, I think it was 5 years, something like that. It's like, whoa, hi, Stephanie. And then we picked up right where we left off.
Same song, same dance.
Chris Ross was still there. I don't know what he was doing there.
Big old friend of Chris Ross.
But we're instant friends still, and I'm still in love with her. Of course, I had to tell her, you know, and obviously. She was like, "Oh no, we're just friends." I was like, "That's fine. You're back in my life."
Yeah,
what more could a guy need?
Well, the love.
What's that?
She could have said, "Yes, I love you too."
Oh yeah, she could have. But you know, I was like, "Okay, that's fine." So, but then. I was just keep doing my thing. In fact, by this point, it was about that following spring, I was contacted by the producers of NBC, mm-hmm. first season of America's Got Talent.
I do not recall this. Really?
I never told you this story? Yeah.
Maybe you did. I don't know.
So they were looking for a variety. Again, it was their first season, so they're just looking for acts, just to get people on. So I was invited to go audition. Mm-hmm. So I went... down to New York City. This was in 2006.
My goodness.
And was it? Yeah, it was 2006. And I went down there into this really long line, but there were too many people there. So I was there for like hours waiting in line.
Of course, yeah.
But there were too many people. So they gave us passes to go back the next day.
Okay.
Like half the line.
Yeah.
They shut it down. And so they said, okay, you can go back. Tomorrow. I couldn't go back the next day because I had something far more important to do.
What was that?
What I had to do, and I never told her. I told her this after, like the following year. I was telling someone else this exact same story.
Yep.
And she was there with me when I was telling the story. And then they asked me, why didn't you go back the next day? And then I told them why. And Stephanie overheard. I couldn't go back the next day. Because I had promised Stephanie I would drive her to the airport.
And to be fair, there were no cell phones, and there was no way to organize another ride.
Well, we had cell phones at that point, but she had asked me to drive her, and I wanted to be there, mm-hmm. and I wanted to be the one to drive her to the airport. She asked it of me. I was like, "This is something I can do. How do you show someone that you love them?
You be there for them.
Bippity boppity boo." That I love her. How do you? That's what I'm going to do. What I say I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. I'm going to help her out. I'm going to keep showing up. I'm going to keep being there. So that's of course, if I told her I was missing an opportunity,
she wouldn't have let you come.
Oh, she would have refused. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She was like, "No way! You marched down to New York City right mm-hmm. this instant." Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And she could have gotten anyone to drive her, but I wanted to do it. Stephanie was always more important than any magic show.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that I had my priorities in order in that way, because it was the following year, 2007, Stephanie had a little surprise for me. And how do you show someone you love them? By always being there for them. When you're always there for someone, it's this principle. I think I heard this from Tony Robbins somewhere. It's the 100% 0% principle. I'm going to paraphrase it. I don't remember exactly what it is, but you give 100% effort to whatever relationship, whether it's with your family, your friends, your colleagues, your work, whatever it is, you give 100% effort for the success of that relationship.
Yeah.
Expect
0%
in return. The idea is that your expectations are in order, because what can we really expect from anyone? They're going to disappoint us. We're human, right?
Lovers always end up lonely because they know how, or true lovers always end up lonely because they know how good it can be.
I've never heard that.
It's a Dawes lyric.
That's interesting. Yeah. Dawescation is coming up pretty soon.
So yeah, somebody that can offer true love can very often end up lonely unless they are fortunate enough to end up with another true lover, because they know how much they're offering.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah, that's... that's exactly what I was doing with Stephanie, and because I was giving 100% effort, expecting nothing in return.
Anything you got back was a positive.
Yeah, it was like, we're friends. Great, we get to hang out. Great, and I think she just realized, wow, this Jonas. I know a good thing when I see it. This is a good thing. I gotta.
Sounds familiar to a thought process that one Mr. Jonas, younger, pre-cell phones had.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And she told me that summer, she said, I'm in love with you too.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah. And
what happened after that?
We got engaged to be married.
Immediately, right?
Well, first we became a couple. Mm-hmm. And then 3 days later, we became engaged to be married. Mm-hmm. And then 2 days later after that, we went on our first date. Yeah.
That's an order more people should think about.
Yeah, I really think
you should always call it off.
Yeah.
Do like a real, Roy and Pam thing. What's a long engagement?
Well, I think they do have those TV shows, 90 Day Fiancé. Have you seen those?
I haven't. I generally don't watch the television. I watch the television, but I don't watch it.
You watch it.
I watch it.
Yeah.
A lot of fingerprints on the TV.
I see. Yeah.
Haha. So continue.
So we got engaged to be married. Oh my goodness. Wonderful. Go on vacation. Just the time of our lives. And I remember at one point during our vacation, went to Lake Winnipesaukee, Laconia, New Hampshire.
Oh, absolutely.
And we just had fun. It was just fun. It was all good fun. Just enjoying each other's company, laughing and smiling and dancing. Oh, the night we became a couple, I recounted the story of how in high school she said, if I want to dance with you, all I have to do is ask. So I said, Stephanie, will you dance with me? And I was meaning figuratively, like,
be my girlfriend. Take this dance, life dance. Yeah.
Yeah. And then she took me seriously, so we got up and danced.
Where were you?
we were in
laundromat.
We were just in like a parking lot, We were just sitting talking. We got out of the car and danced. But then she was my girlfriend after that.
That's phenomenal.
Life changed forever in that moment. And but during this weekend, she turned to me at one point and she said, we never talk about the. Like the serious stuff, the bad, like the hard stuff, And I was like, there'll be plenty of time for that.
Plenty of time.
Let's just enjoy.
Yeah.
Let's enjoy this. And during that weekend too, I remember at one point we were at Longhorn Steakhouse,
a classic Laconia eatery.
Yes, it was actually the one in Keene. It was on the way up to Laconia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and she was eyeing the cheesecake on the menu the whole meal. And I was like, you want the cheesecake? We'll get the cheesecake, whatever you want.
Whatever you want. I have a girlfriend, so whatever you want.
Yeah, that was my stance. Mm-hmm. I finally, but then at the end of the dinner, she was too full. And I, I said? I said,
you're going to eat this freaking cheesecake.
Basically what I said. I said,
I already ordered the cheesecake.
I said, life is too short. If you get the cheesecake. get the cheesecake. So we did. I told her, even if it's just a couple bites.
Yeah.
We only ate like half of it. But yeah. You know, we
what I wouldn't do for some cheesecake right now.
Oh, I love cheesecake. Yeah. I'm on the keto diet right now. I can't.
The keto success
the key,
is
the keto
to not eat
success
cheesecake.
Is to, yeah, at least for right now. But life is too short. Maybe I should eat the cheesecake. But yeah, amazing person came into my life, rocked my world. Mm-hmm. And then 2 days after we got back from vacation, she randomly died. Just out of the blue. Didn't know anything was wrong. She didn't know anything. It was just, you go to sleep at night, you think you're going to be fine. But she was always the exception. She was exceptional. So she was the exception to the rule. You go to bed and it just ran. It was a blood clot. And it could happen to anyone at any time. And it was very jarring to me because everything happened quickly. I mean, it was like over the course of a month, you know, where we were kind of evolving to, oh, maybe we could work out. Let's try this. And it was like, no, you know what? Yeah, it was very quick. Mm-hmm. So like in a week span, it went from I'm in love with you, girlfriend, engaged, date, amazing weekend. I'm just like, when we get back, we were talking about the wedding plans, talking about the people we're going to invite. And then the very next day, she's gone. It changed me. I am not who I used to be. I literally had to change my name. Mm-hmm. You know, part of the reason because I'm dramatic. so I wanted to. But in a literal way, one of the frustrations from this time was, I was trying to cope with what had happened, to have like a sense of normalcy. So I was still doing magic shows. Like I had all these magic shows booked. I was like, I would show up. I was like a shell of a person. Like I show up, just put on that mask, on that smile.
A kid's birthday party.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine. Did you take any time off at all?
I took a weekend off. Well, not most of a week. So the week of her funeral. So that weekend I had a bunch of shows booked. I canceled all of them except for one. Because it was a charity event. It was for like a cancer benefit. Yeah. I was like, I think she would want me to do this. But I probably shouldn't have done it because I was like, I'd be doing a card trick and then like something would trigger me and I'd just start crying even with smiles on my face. I was like, I probably shouldn't be here.
Yeah.
But they were appreciative that I showed up. So I did take a little bit of time off. But then when I went back, yeah, it was very strange to have to put smiles on other people's faces.
When you couldn't put one on yourself.
I didn't even want to be alive anymore.
Of course.
And that was very hard because because I had lost myself, but I was still alive to grieve my own death. Like Jonas Toutant died.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a big frustration to try and be someone, trying to go back to who you once were, because that's what you know. You know, that's just who you've always been.
But who you once were, you had always, more than like around 10 years, had that dream of you and Stephanie. You had always, that had been part of your identity. And that dream was officially ended.
And what's beautiful about it too is that there's a difference between the dreams that you want to have a reality, which I of course did. I wanted it so bad. But then there's also the other dreams that you have that are kind of like pipe dreams, that they're possible.
Mm-hmm.
They're possible, but are they likely? For a number of those years, I didn't even know where she was.
Of course.
But just in the back of my mind, I was like, yeah, Stephanie's out there
it's
somewhere.
It's very easy to let something simmer on the back burner.
And that's what it was for me. And for a lot of people, it's moving to Hawaii.
Of course.
You know, for some people, it's being a rock star or a baseball, you know, star or a
whatever.
It's possible, but
that candle can almost burn endlessly.
Yeah.
And then all those dreams can, even if you get older, somehow you convince yourself in the back of your mind that there's a potential that could happen, you know?
But with Stephanie that day, the whole identity of, you know, that was gone.
Something that you can't repair.
Yeah. So it was frustrating. Now going to, from fascination, it was the most frustrating thing that I had ever experienced. And frustration is dangerous, because once we lose fascination and we move to frustration, that's very easy to move into confusion. It's easy to move into discouragement, and then move into despair. Mm-hmm. We can get stuck in, I call it, negative affirmation. So it's sort of that limbo between discouragement and despair, and negative affirmation equal and opposite to positive affirmation. We can receive negative rewards, so we can get something from being in that space.
What do you mean?
So it could be, misery loves a party, you know, pity parties, you know. Yeah. Misery loves company, and you get a different quality of attention. Mm-hmm. When you're in that space and you surround yourself with other people who are miserable too, and you share each other's stories, and you just bring each other so down. Yeah. But it's this sense of community. It's this, we're social beings.
Yeah.
So it's a dangerous place to be, because when you're there too long in that negative affirmation, that's when you go into the deepest pit, which is utter despair. And I ended up there. I got there. I didn't want to be alive anymore. I wanted to kill myself, and I tried a number of times, never went through with it, because I didn't want to be alive.
What do you mean you tried?
So there was this one particular day. There was actually 2 days around the same thing. So October 7th. 2007. So Stephanie and I, we got engaged to be married, but I didn't give her a ring. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a ring yet. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just like, I had 3 days.
Of course.
You know, so I ended up, during that week though, it was actually before we left on vacation, I did pick out a ring. I just didn't get it from the story, but I was like, that's the ring. That's the one.
Yeah.
And I decided that I was going to give it to her on October 7th.
And why is that?
And the reason is because her grandparents got engaged in the timeline, like after a certain number of weeks of like meeting, that's when they got engaged.
And that would have been the same.
So I was like, that's kind of romantic.
Of course.
You know, so I had planned the whole thing. Like it was going to be October 7th. It was going to be a beautiful day. We were going to go up in a hot air balloon, and I was going to make the clouds disappear. There's this magic trick. You can make clouds disappear. It's called cloud busting. It's pretty neat. So I was going to do that.
For real?
Yeah. Yeah.
How? I don't explain, but what is it, to the viewer, what does it appear like is happening?
So it appears like, so say you're off in a meadow.
Okay.
With a grand wizard.
Sorcerer. Yeah.
And the wizard's like, okay, you see that cloud right there? Watch it very carefully, and you just wave your hands. Mm-hmm. And the cloud disappears.
Because it just moves?
No, it actually dissipates. It actually disappears.
Butterfly effect sort of stuff, right?
There is a science behind it. But yeah, so there's a book by Devin Knight called Cloud Busting. You should check it out.
I would love to. Yeah. Cloud Busting by Devin Knight.
Yeah, it's a great book.
So after this an event that you can't describe in words, honestly, without telling the story. I don't think you could describe it in a sentence. Once that happens to you, and you find yourself in this understandably deep hole, how do you go from that person, which I did meet? I did know that, Jonas. That's when I met you.
You met me in, it was less than a year after.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the Jonas that I, by the way, still very much enjoyed meeting.
Thank you.
That happens, and here we are, 2019, with the strongest Jonas I've ever known. How do you go from that extraordinarily low to today's high?
You've seen me at some weak points, mm-hmm. and I appreciate you sticking by me, Andy.
Of course. I would imagine I would be able to say the same to you.
Of course, mm-hmm. You're my brother, Andy.
There it is.
To get from where I was to where I am today, it takes fascination. Mm-hmm. I will say that is a key word, is to stay fascinated. But even before fascination, there's something. So there's fascination and there's frustration. Mm-hmm. You want one, not the other. But there's something in between those two, which is very, very important. And it's acceptance. Mm-hmm. That's the ground floor of happiness, but it's also the ground floor of unhappiness. You can build off of either one, and fascination is the key to growing up, to experience the most profound joys that you can ever experience. You know, being happy doesn't mean that everything works out just the way you want,
of course,
but it means that you're going to be okay regardless of what happens. So the way that I got to be here today and to be truly the happiest and most joy-filled person I've ever been, sincerely, is how I met you. Mm-hmm. So I met you, Andy, at Boys State.
Massachusetts Boys State.
Yeah. And I've been doing that now. We'll be coming up on my 19th year on staff.
That's... my goodness gracious.
It's crazy to think, like, how many other things have I been doing consistently? So that's... and I didn't realize it at the time. It took me a few years of doing it after the dark period. I call it like the dark period of Jonas, the dark ages of Jonas.
It's a time of metamorphosis.
Yeah. So I, after a few years of it, I realized something, that even though I was in this pit of despair, even though I was... I had turned to alcohol. I would drink constantly. Like I never drank before that, but I didn't want to be alive. So I was like, what does it matter? I just want to drink, not to enjoy myself, not even to numb the pain, but to drink to the excess, hoping I would die or do something that would lead to my death. Mm-hmm. Because I could never, like, I always thought, okay, maybe if I get really drunk, I'll go jump off a building. You know, or
you could kind of finally convince yourself of the thing that you thought was right.
Yeah, that's where I was. But even being in this space, every June, I could put it on hold. I could put the grief on hold just for that 1 week. Mm-hmm. And I could be that positive influence in the lives of these young people. And I didn't realize that's what I was doing. I mean, I was doing it, but it was something that mattered. How do you show people that you love them? You show up. And I would show up every year for this. And then after a few years of this, even being in that mind space, I realized, wow, if I can put it on hold for that 1 week, this must be really important. Mm-hmm. And then the fascination started to come back. I was like, well, if that's important enough to keep me from being depressed, keeping me from drinking alcohol, to keep me from being suicidal, if that's that important, well, why don't I do this full time? And that was the beginning of the creating who I am.
When you say this, Boys State obviously is a situation where, as a counselor, you can have an extremely strong effect on a high schooler's life. Now, when I went to Boys State, we had counselors who really were teachers, and that's what you're talking about, brought the fascination.
Yes, yeah. So it was, you know, being a counselor, being this a person who, what we were talking about at the beginning of this podcast, mm-hmm. about being a positive presence, mm-hmm. and modeling.
That's what you were at Boys State.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that's what I was in. But then it became... when I realized how important, like, I knew it was important, but when I consciously was able to pinpoint why this is so important, especially being a positive influence in the lives of people at that age, where they're not exactly kids, but they're not exactly adults. Mm-hmm. They're these emerging adults, that very malleable time in their lives. And if they can see someone living in a positive way, to model that great behavior, well, to be able to influence them, that they could, it could literally change their lives.
Yeah.
And but it's not even age-wise, but it's really everyone, again, is experiencing some sort of change and transition in their lives. So when I realized that's why it was so important, that's when I decided, oh, I need to become a teacher, or I need to become a counselor, or I need to something like that. A
guide of some sort.
A guide, a mentor. A
custodian.
That's what I was thinking. Maybe I'll be a custodian. But that's when I ultimately landed on being a motivational speaker, a life coach, workshop facilitator, mm-hmm. facilitator fascination, and purveyor of positivity. Mm-hmm. And that's where I landed. And I've been working on that. I mean, it was 2007 when everything hit the fan. It was 2010 when I sort of had this realization and so I've been working on that ever since. And it's been quite the ride, ups and downs and all around.
Of course.
But it's important work. Everyone has a reason to suffer, but they don't have to.
Everyone will at some point be in pain, but that doesn't mean that they have to suffer.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
My goodness. Well, Jonas, that's the most moving story that I know that any of my friends can honestly tell to me. And I consider you a good friend and a brother. And I really thank you for coming on the podcast today. One, as today's first guest, the first guest on our podcast.
I can't wait to interview you.
Yeah, I think I might have a couple of things to say. but of course, obviously, as a guest and of course as the co-host of all these of every other episode. Jonas, thank you so much. Any last words that you'd like to share?
Yes. Be fascinated. Stay fascinated. I'm convinced that is the secret to happiness and success in a meaningful life. Stay fascinated.
Well, you heard it from the man himself. Stay fascinated.
Well, that's it for a day's work podcast. I hope you enjoyed listening. Talk to you real soon.